The Rush Hour. Gus Warland, Jude Bolton, and Wendell Saylor. This is the Triple M Rush Hour.
What about this, boys? Self-driving buses could hit New South Wales roads as soon as next year, with trials for the futuristic vehicles preparing to begin. I'm not sure, Jude, that I would actually jump on a driverless bus.
Oh, please. They've been trialling it up at Coffs Harbour. Apparently it's been going really well. But I can see the bus driver association blowing up, because anytime there's automation, you know, you suddenly lose your job. So let's suck it and see this one.
I reckon I probably would in another country, but I'm not quite sure I'm going to trust it here yet, because the government have only going to invest $5 million on an on-road connection and an automated vehicle bus trial. Only $5 million. Doesn't seem that much.
Warland, you had 3 accidents in one day the other day.
Yeah.
Pull your head in, mate.
Yeah.
And embrace the trial.
Yeah, and I got to say, look, I'm...
Make a good point.
I'm a bit different to Jude and you. Mate, you know what? We've gone through a tough couple of years. I don't want to see people laid off because of, obviously... You know, look, I only started internet banking about 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah, that is true.
So, but I
When was the last time you went on a bus? Except to a test match or something with... A couple of weeks ago.
I
jumped on a bus. Yeah, I catch public transport, you know, up and from Wollongong and that, so I love it. And, yeah, I love it.
Didn't really. Well, speaking of no drivers, our train network is on strike again. Oh. It's expected to last 3 weeks. So for all our listeners that listen to the Brekkie show coming in the morning, then the drive show with us going home, there's going to be major disruptions all day, especially on the T4 eastern suburbs, Illawarra and South Coast services. The strike action has stopped for today, as of a few minutes ago, but it's still expected to be chaos. So we'll give you regular updates throughout the show.
Thanks to DoorDash, official delivery partner of the NRL.
Yeah, a few things to talk about here, Dill. What about this? I'd love for Fox NRL to stop showing my leg getting snapped every night. This is a tweet from Jackson Hastings. It's done. The player's been suspended. No one, especially myself and my family, want to keep seeing, reliving it every time a show or the ad comes on. Please move on.
Yeah, I totally understand. Like, I think for Jackson Hastings too, because he's had trauma, I totally understand where he's coming from and his family. They don't need to see it time and time again. But of course, Fox, I think the hardest thing too with Fox and other mainstream stations is because the cannonball tackle, is obviously, we're trying to outlaw
that
tackle.
It's a discussion point at the moment.
So it's a discussion point. So that's why they keep playing it. It's unfortunate for Jackson Hastings. And I've been there. I fractured my eye socket and I got a titanium plate inside of my cheek and 6 screws. They went in through my eye.
You're a RoboCop.
Yeah, and pushed it out. They pushed it out. It was like a tire lever. They pushed it out and they kept playing that when I got injured. But this is a bit different because it's cannonball and the way it was done.
When you got injured and you kept seeing it getting replayed, does that stop you getting better?
I think his is a bit different.
Triggering, isn't it?
Yeah, it triggers you. It does trigger you. I didn't mind too much because it was, for me, I was healed in a month, but you know, Jackson Hastings, it's going to be a long injury for him, but also it's the mental scarring around it. Mm. You know, time and time again, you go through that. You know that, Jude.
Yeah, absolutely. An incident in AFL happened with Gary Rowan when he got his leg broken, and the incident changed the rules. They've got forceful contact below the knees, and he just hated seeing it over and over. But what about the Sydney Roosters hooker? Sam Verrills has elected to move on from the Tricolours, and he's signed a 2-year deal with the Gold Coast Titans. What do you make of this, mate?
Yeah, I think it's a good signing for the Titans. They need a little bit of experience there. I think their spine's let them down this year. I know Brimson's a good player, but in and around the 6-7 and obviously the 9, Sam Verrills is going to bring some experience. I think he's a quality person. I know he's had a few injuries.
He's a quality person for sure.
Yeah, he is, and I think it's going to be good. This is what the Titans need to do, sign players like this, because it's 2 years. He can be a senior player in and around that group and give some experience, but also he's a competitor. And this year the Titans, they've been in games, you know, for 40, 50 minutes, but they got to learn to play for 80, and he'll set a great standard for them.
Yeah, don't forget he scored that first try in that 2018 grand final against Canberra, you know, from dummy half and stuff. Yeah. So he can get back to that sort of form, but hopefully he'll get a couple of good matches of the Roosters at the back end of the season so we can go the way he should go. What about Paul Gallen? We'll hand $50,000 over to Justin Hodges if he can knock him out on September 15, and Paul Gallen's going to fight not only him in one night, but Ben Hannett as well. Is Gal sort of, you know, bitten off too much to chew here, or do you think we'll get them both covered?
Mate, can I tell you, look, I actually feel... Look, Ben Hannett's tough, and I know that Hodges has beaten, you know, Hodges beat Hannett the last time, Benny Hannett, and but Paul Gallen, he's just tough. He's made from titanium, that bloke. Mm-hmm. He'll beat both these guys, but I just worry about these guys too, more so Justin Hodges too, because I just think he's a different pedigree the way that he fights Gal. But Gal told me, I spoke to him at a luncheon a couple of weeks ago, and he said he wasn't going to fight Hodges, but he was actually saying to me that he's actually just about done with boxing, because when he got beaten by the actual boxing champion a couple of months ago, he just said for the first time he started to feel a bit slow on that. I'm thinking, mate, you're 40-41. Yeah. You play at the highest.
So take two fights. It's incredible.
I know, but I think he knows the end's coming near, so he's just doing what Paul Gallen does, and Gal will beat both these guys, and obviously the money's going to be good. Gal likes money. Who doesn't like money?
Exactly right. And there's still people that want to watch it just to see him get knocked out as well, and he understands that.
Well, mate, that's
his box office.
Yeah, but that's why he's put the bonus up there, $50,000. Can I say, Justin Hodges is not going to be knocking Paul Gallen out. Paul Gallen, his head, like you've seen him fight. Like,
oh,
he's taking punches from Mark Hunt. Like, it's unbelievable.
Couldn't believe it. Caught up with a mate of mine, hadn't seen since the funeral of his father, actually, about a month or so ago. And his father was elderly, and in the end, he was actually quite ill. So it was a bit of a celebration at his funeral. Great bloke, lots of really good stories and stuff around his life and memories from us, I suppose, of being, you know, youngsters in their house and having sleepovers and so forth. So great bloke. And he goes, you know what we're doing with the ashes? And I said, oh, mate, I imagine you'll do what most people do. You either put them in a vase somewhere, and then family come around, you might, you know, deliver them into the ocean or his favourite place or his favourite park. He goes, no, we've already done it. Have a look at this.
What happened?
He's made the ash go into this board game. You know when you've got a board game and you've got to twist the timer?
Yes, yes.
You know, whatever that is, like an egg.
Like an egg timer.
They've made six of them.
Like sands through the hourglass.
Exactly. Those are the days of our life.
Exactly.
Correct.
Great show. Yeah.
So they were always sort of, they used to love their board games and so forth. So they've made six of these hourglasses that are going to be delivered to each member of the family. So when they have board games and it goes for a timer, the actual ash will be inside the timer, like their dad's still there with them.
My goodness.
Mate.
I mean, board games can get pretty heated. If someone knocks that over, I don't want to be getting the vacuum out,
Dyson, and vacuuming up dad. Don't you think, it's a good point. Don't you think that's pretty average though?
No, not really, because, you know, dad is always going to be a part of the family and the games. That's what you want.
Keith Richards, didn't he snort his father's ashes with a white substance? It was.
Did he?
He did.
Did he get a little bit?
I don't think.
I don't know, mate. I wouldn't know about that, but yeah, I don't know.
Oh, mate, you're suspended for that, so you know exactly.
My drink was spiked, mate. Well, so let me go, mate.
Hey, come on, mate.
What did you do with the ashes? And you can't believe how many calls. Will, start the ball rolling, mate. What happened?
Yeah, g'day, guys. Look, I was only about 12 years old back in the 90s. My nan and my pop, they were big fanatics of Parramatta Eels. Mm-hmm. So what happened is my nan wanted to be spread it out across Parramatta, the old Parramatta Stadium.
Cumberland Oval,
that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
But we waited for a couple of years after that. My pop died about 4 years after that, and we ended up organising their ashes to be sprinkled in the in-gold area opposite ends of the field.
Oh, that's nice. Oh,
wow. That's good.
It was pretty good.
Did Parramatta organise that with you, or did you just sort of nip out there and do it?
No, we organised it through, I think it was the chairman of the Parramatta Leagues Club. Like I said, I was only 12 years old. My mum organised most of it. And then when they closed the ground, I went back and I got a bit of grass from the both in golds of the stadium when they were giving away the chairs and the grass.
Oh, good on you, Will. That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Lovely story. Yeah.
What about Jono there from Maroubra?
Hello.
Hey,
mate.
What happened with the ashes?
Yeah, g'day, mate. I grew up on a property, and a few years ago, sort of, father passed away, and a couple of brothers, we all went our separate ways, and we caught up for a bit of a session when we did catch up back at the property, and we ended up, the old Fergie was needing new tyres and tubeless tyres. We ended up scattering his ashes into the, you know, into the tubes before it was fitted. tricky and both, you know, feelings at the moment, but it was funny at the time. But we have a chuckle now, and one of the brothers is still running around, and it's power, and the crops are good, and the old man's still doing the rounds, I guess.
That's beautiful, Jono. And what I love about Australians and emotional stuff, guys, is that we always go to having a laugh and always go to our sense of humour.
Yeah. What about Rodney there from Mount Pritchard, mate? What's your story on the Ashes?
Hey, boys. How are you?
Good, thanks, mate.
We lost a family friend about 4 years ago, and he'd previously said that he'd always wanted his ashes scattered over the ocean somewhere. Yep. So we figured we'd take him down to the Seacliff Bridge down on the south coast and let it go off the bridge. We gets down there and walked about halfway along the bridge so that we found a section that was hanging right over the water.
Nice.
And his partner proceeded to empty the bottle, so to speak, and let him go. And he was about half of him had already gone, and then we had this big gust of wind came up and blew upwards and blew the rest of him all over the road on the bridge.
Oh, no.
True story, I tell you. And we just pissed ourselves laughing, cracked our bottle of Moe and drank that, and then went down the pub and had some more beers.
Good on you, Rodney. Say,
beautiful. Good part of the world down there too, South Coast area.
Sure is. Yeah. Let's go to Newport on the northern beach of Sydney and speak to Mark. G'day, Mark.
Hey, Gussie, how you going?
Good, mate. What happened with the Ashes?
Well, firstly, I'd like you to keep back announcing the fooies like that.
Exactly.
So, a man and mate of mine were paid to clean out a garage in Randwick a lot of years ago, and we found something in there we wanted to keep, which was a diff out of an old HQ.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to move it, we had to drain the oil out of it. So we're looking around everywhere to find something to put this oil in. Mm-hmm. But anyway, my mate comes back, wandering back into the garage, and he goes, oh, I found something. I just emptied this out, and we can tip the oil into this. And I turned around and looked at him, and here he is holding an urn.
Oh no.
He's just Where did he tip it out,
Mark?
In the garage somewhere.
Yeah, no, just next to the garage in the alleyway, just in the garden.
Oh, mate. Oh, so what did you do? Just scrape it back in, or?
Oh, no, it was long gone, mate. And she was, we're like, oh well.
So the oil in and got it going.
Thank you, Mark. Let's go to Vanessa to finish it off on the Central Coast. G'day, Vanessa.
Hey, guys. How you going?
Yeah, good. What happened to the ashes?
Well, we had a big ashes day this year, the beginning of the year. We know we had some crazy weather in New South Wales, and we had quite a big family day. So we'd done a pizza day. We had about 30 pizzas, about 40 family members, and we kept getting blackouts. So we'd be watching the cricket, and all of a sudden, the telly would go out. All of a sudden, it'd come back on. So all up, we had about half a dozen blackouts. And we never even got to see the ashes, let alone the game, let alone one ball.
Thank you, Vanessa. That's great. So good. Time to talk motorsport. Let's talk to this man.
Our next guest is a supercars champion with 20 consecutive supercar seasons under his seatbelt. He's the reigning king of the mountain, storming to the number one spot in last year's Bathurst 1000 with his co-driver, Chaz Mostert. He's driven for multiple teams and he's about to make history. Next week, he'll bring up start number 500 at the Penrite Oil Sandown Super Sprint. Please welcome to the Rush Hour, Lee Holdsworth.
Yes, an absolute champion, royalty when it comes to motorsport. Lee, welcome to the show.
G'day, guys. What an intro.
Mate, we wanted to make you feel all the love.
Only the best for you, mate.
Oh, it's great. No, I feel great. Thanks for having me on, guys. Looking forward to next weekend, obviously, with the Penrite Super Sprint coming up. So ready to go.
So that's going to be race 500. I mean, we talk to sports people all the time, and I guess we talk about them getting their first appearance or first game or the like. What is it like for you coming up to race 500?
Oh, well, I can remember when I had my first race back in 2006, and I thought, wow, how cool is that? I've just achieved my childhood dream of actually racing in the Supercar Championship. And now being up to, I'm on 499 at the moment, going to hit 500 next weekend. It's sort of a bit of a pinch me moment because sort of wonder where it's all gone. You know, I can't remember them all, that's for sure. There's too many to remember, but I've had some great memories in the sport. I've enjoyed, you know, a lot of moments. There's been a lot of lows as there is in sport, but the highs are just something that keeps bringing you back. And I just love the sport, love motorsport, and still living my dream. So yeah, pretty amazed to reach that number amongst some pretty, you know, incredible drivers in that crew as well that have made it to that number.
Lee, there's one thing that I've always really appreciated and respected about you guys too, like your fitness away from the camera. That's just things, you know, you just get in the car and you just drive and that. But then when I did The Greatest Athlete, I got to see like Craig Lowndes and these guys behind the scenes, and you're actually quite fit. You got to do a lot of stuff outside the car as well to make sure you're fit to be in the car.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, we certainly do a fair bit of fitness to be race ready. There's not anything quite like actually the race fitness. We find it hard to train for that sort of fitness that's required in the car, because of the heat that we sustain. It's, you know, 25, 30 degrees hotter in the cabin than what it is ambient temp outside. You know, the adrenaline's got your heart rate up. You're working pretty hard in there. So we train for the only thing we can do is that physical training most of the time. So to train for that, you need that heart rate, your average heart rate, to be around that 160 mark, and then, you know, have it spiking up at, say, 200, and we don't really get anything under 120 in the race. So, yeah, we're working pretty hard. We're losing a lot of fluid at the same time. We're certainly more than just fat-arming it down Lygon Street.
Yeah. When you are doing that, what sort of car do you drive when you're not on the track?
Oh, I've got the old family Ford Everest. So, it's a great car, but it's not what people expect me to say.
Mate, I've got to ask this. When I was growing up, there was a guy called Peter Brock. He's number 5.
Yeah, he might know him.
But he was one of my heroes. And just to watch the way that he carried himself, you know, there was Dick Johnson when I grew up in Queensland, but Peter Brock, there was something about him. When you were growing up, who were your heroes? Who did you look up to?
Yeah, well, it was definitely Peter Brock was one of the names, but I looked up to a lot of the guys that I even raced against when I first came into the category with, you know, Craig Lowndes, Mark Scaife.
Yeah.
Jim Richards. I didn't get the privilege of racing against him, but they call him Gentleman Jim. He's a legend. And yeah, awesome driver. But yeah, there's plenty of guys that I looked up to, but Brocky was probably the number one, and Lowndesy took on that same attitude as Brocky, where he had a plenty of times for the fans, plus, you know, great on track. And I tried to adopt a bit of that.
Let's talk about the fact that you're an ambassador for the Kidney Car Rally, and Car is spelt K-A-R, 5,040-kilometre fundraiser from Cairns to Dubbo, and that's happening August 10 to 20. Kidney Health Australia's longest-running event, the Kidney Car Rally, is returning for its 32nd year next month, starting out in Cairns in far north Queensland on August 10th and reaching Dubbo in New South Wales on August 20. Something that you're proud to be an ambassador for, Lee.
Yeah, it's such a great foundation. You know, these guys have been running it for many years now and raised something like $15 million. And it's not enough. It's done a lot for the families that suffer with, you know, a child or themselves having that kidney health disease. It's a terrible issue, and, you know, we need to raise awareness for it. There's something like 1.6 or 7 million people currently living with kidney disease in Australia. And, we'd like to help these families find the money and the support that they need in the kids and youth programs that that Kidney Health are running. And this Kidney Car Rally is doing great things for the foundation. You know, I'm so disappointed that I couldn't be out there going on these rallies with a whole bunch of good people.
Lee, we're all right behind you. Good luck in your 500th race. Thanks for the chat.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for the support with the Kidney Car Rally too.
No problem at all. Mate. There's Lee Holdsworth there, Bathurst winner. What an absolute legend, Del.
Mate, really good fellow. And I like how you said that, because we're all a bit different. There's some people that are weird and free spirits. Mm. Mate, you can't be too PC these days, but we have to be sometimes.
Yeah, we certainly do. What about this? Former Patriot says he crashed his car to avoid being cut by the coach, Bill Belichick, when he was late for practice. Basically, the coach of New England, if you don't know who that is, the Patriots play in the National Football League over there, one of the best sides. Well, Belichick basically says if you're late for anything, you get fined, you get chopped, you get done and dusted. So this bloke woke up with his alarm not going off. With a 5 minutes before he's going to be late, he's got a 15-minute drive to get there. So instead of actually just getting in being late, he got in this car, deliberately had a car crash, so then he could use that as evidence for the fact that he was going to be late. Now, that's desperado times. You've ever had anything like that, Jude, on your way to Swans training?
Oh, I can empathise with this. I've had that sort of feeling of, like, I just do not want to be late.
Yeah.
And you actually go, oh, no, like I need to think of something, but I had one. We had a 6 a.m. Session down at Maroubra one day, and this was a penalty for people being late or doing something before.
The penalty on the
and
penalty.
And I was going to be late for the penalty session, which means everyone turns up again the next day at like 5 a.m. And I came along Old South Head Road near Bondi and a flat tyre, and I'd swear I changed the tyre, jacked it up on the jack, the car, and I changed it like Max Verstappen pit crew in F1.
Oh, here we go.
I turned up like a minute late, and I just had grease all over my hands. I'm like, mate, I've changed the tyre. Like, please, like.
And you got away with it?
Give me a spell. Yeah, exactly. I had money in the bank, you know.
Exactly. You are Jude Bolton at the end of the day. I see a church fan in front of me, he says, so I dinged it up and got the black smoke coming out of the exhaust pipe, and I'm like, I'm going to hit the car. It's better to pay the insurance and embarrass myself by being late to a Patriots team meeting. What about I'm looking at you, Del.
Oh, no, don't involve me. Please don't involve me.
No, you're sitting there all quiet. Which code and what happened?
Well, you know what? This is very true about me. Sometimes when you ask me a question, do you really want the answer?
Yes.
So when I was at the Broncos back in the early days, I was just happy to be in the Broncos squad, okay? So there was a couple of great wingers there. Mm. Anyway, so I was happy just to be in the first grade squad.
Sure.
And then, you know, be social. Anyway, so a couple of times, I would just march to my own beat. So like if training was at 2:30, I'd just think, okay, I'll go to sleep at 1:30. I'll just get trained on whenever I feel like it. Oh, so after about the third time, Wayne Bennett he had enough. He said, mate, if you're late again, mate, you're going back to reserve grade and you won't be in first grade for a month. And I said, yeah, okay. And I thought, okay, can't be late again. So on a Saturday morning, for some reason, I just thought we had Saturday morning off. So I'm getting my BMW washed at this point in time.
Oh, here we go.
And Scott Blacker said to me, who was in reserve grade, he goes, what are you doing here? We're at Red Hill. He goes, mate, the boys are down there training. And I said, no way. And at the time, I was living with Anthony Seibold. So, at this time, I thought I'm gone. So I rushed home, got changed within 10 minutes. As I'm driving down there, I walked in, and Wayne Bennett looks at me. They're halfway through a session, and he just points, as in to run around the field. As I run back, I get there, and he goes, mate, you're in reserve grade tomorrow. I said, what? You're in reserve grade. So rather than think, okay, I've done the wrong thing, I get home and I ring the manager. I said, listen, I want out of the Broncos. I want to go to the Western Reds. So.
Which they would add you too.
Yeah, I wanted to release. So Peter Mulholland was keen to sign me. So the next week, I asked for a release from the Broncos.
What did Bennett say?
Bennett said, you're not going anywhere, mate. You got a contract here. You're staying here. And it was the best thing for me because you know what? Sometimes I can't do what I want and sometimes I need to be pulled in the line.
Yeah, that is true. And you know what? For a moment, Jude, I'm thinking MG and Dell together for the Western Reds. Imagine what would have happened.
Leopards don't change their spots, mate. You're always late.
Mate, you haven't been here this week. You have. But, mate, I'm a new man, mate. Since I come back from my little holidays, I'm sweet. I'm on like Donkey Kong.
You've got to stop talking about that, mate, because you've been here for 5 minutes.
Okay, sorry. You're right.
What about this? I can't believe this. Most of our politicians should hang their head in shame. The Nazi symbol, a one step closer to being banned in New South Wales after legislation criminalising their use, passed the state parliament's lower house on Tuesday. Individuals would face 12 months in prison or an $11,000 fine for breaking the laws, while corporations face $55,000 fines. It follows a ban on the Nazi Swats, that Swastika in Victoria.
Of course.
And pledges... Swats, is it Swats? Sorry, mate.
Swastika.
And pledges by the Queensland and Tasmanian governments to prohibit the hate symbol. Why hasn't this been done like the day after World War II? Why, Jude, are we still talking about it and sort of now getting round to perhaps saying it's not a good thing?
It should have been done ages ago. I guess there has been this sort of rise of sort of some of the far right groups, and it's just, I think they've probably said we've got to address this. It's just not.
But what do you mean address this? The day after World War II, we go, that's not a good thing. We ban it in Australia. It doesn't have to be in other parts of the world, but every state in Australia should have gone, well, that's not right, and we're getting rid of it.
Yeah, I know, but sometimes because we're used to it being around and living with it, and
movies and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I used to go to a gym. I can't say where this gym is, and that stick or that flag used to be in the gym
that
all the time. And me and my trainer, we used to go, okay, mate, what's
who are you training with?
Oh, I can't say, but it wasn't his gym. him, but it was someone.
Yeah, but you should have said, I'm not training here with that.
Oh, mate, I don't care, mate. I'm a pretty tough cookie, mate. Like, I will train anywhere, anytime, any place. Sorry, well, I thought I was Apollo Creed for a minute.
Yeah. So let's talk about this. What's been banned before the Nazi flag, right?
Give us something. Give us something.
Plastic bags were banned before the Nazi flag.
Fair enough.
E-scooters from Sydney's footpaths.
Yeah.
The man who took a wee from the SCG roof of the rugby
fair enough.
Plastic straws have been banned before the Nazi flag.
Yeah.
What is wrong with this country?
How did that guy get up on that stand? It still baffles me. But yeah,
but you talk about it as if that was a good thing that he got up there. And that treasured ground where you played so many games,
dude. Come on, mate.
Ridiculous.
Honestly,
ridiculous.
New South Wales politicians, and we know you pipe us through the parliament. So if you're listening to us right now, get your you-know-what together. Get the Nazi symbol banned.
Yes.
Full stop. Can't believe it hasn't been done already. Let's talk rugby league.
The Rush Hours. Preview. Thanks to DoorDash, official delivery partner of the NRL.
Jude, we're talking the West Tigers.
Yeah, Del, Brent Naden has signed a contract extension that'll keep him with the Tigers until at least at the end of 2025. Naden is 26. He's obviously left Canterbury after Trent Barrett stepped down as coach. Naden joins fellow outside backs, a couple of those outside there. And just what are your thoughts on this, mate?
Yeah, look, I like young Naden as a player. I mean, he's 26 now, and when he came on the scene, you know, he's always had potential and he's been to a couple of clubs now. Look, I think it's a solid signing for, for the Tigers, but I still reckon they need a big name, a big superstar to build that team around. You know, I don't think they. Adam Dewey's their best player, I think, you know. But I think. Jackson Hastings is a good player, but. And I know he's very talented, but I just think you need that marquee player, and they just don't have one, the Tigers. But Naden, I'm a fan, and he's a good player.
Now, there's been a fresh twist in the playing future of Isaiah Papali'i with the Parramatta star considering requesting a release from his West Tigers deal to relocate back to New Zealand. What are your thoughts on this? And obviously the NRL Players Association have tried to step in as well.
Yeah, look, I totally understand, look, where he's coming from here. Like, but I think when you sign a contract, man, clubs get upset now because when players sign, you know, contracts, they go, oh, we're getting, you know, getting Papali'i or we're getting someone else, and all of a sudden they're talking about backflipping out of a contract, and we
might have to let players go to actually get that deal done. So
that's right.
The club all of a sudden gets signed into confusion, no fault of theirs.
Yeah, look, totally understand that. Leave with the Tigers. They think they're getting a pretty handy player. I've got no doubt. When he left the Warriors, mate, very good player. He went to a new level, obviously, when he was at Parramatta. Parramatta tried to hold on to him, but now he wants to go back home to New Zealand because he's homesick. I understand with the family in and around that. So it's up to him and his management. Look, I don't want a player at my club if they don't want to be there. I'd let him go back to New Zealand, but I can understand the Tigers wanting him because he is a quality player.
Yeah, he's one of those key players that Tigers need to build their team around, which is what you just said.
And if Parramatta are any chance of winning grand final this year, it's going to be around a guy like him because he is, I didn't realise he was that good, but the last sort of 18 months, he's gone to a whole new level.
What about Burton, Matty Burton? Is he the best kicker in the game overall? And before I get you both to answer that, obviously different types of kickers, kicking, you know, for distance out of the hand, kicking for goal, the little grubbers into the in goal, as well as pulling up bombs when you're in an attacking position. So four different types of kicks, if you like. Is he the best in the game overall at all four?
I think overall, there's no doubt he's talented. He's a left footer. When he hits them, they swing, and you see,
unbelievable.
No one can get near. When you're a fullback, and you know,
it's
a
nightmare.
When they catch him, mate, you're happy they catch him. I personally think Nathan Cleary's the best all round kicker. But Burton, as a winger and as a fullback, as soon as he hits it, dude, you know more than me about the technique that he hits it. He hits it so sweetly, and they just swing. Even when he doesn't hit it sweetly, mate, they're still
incredible.
Miss it. Yeah,
they're sensational to watch. Yeah. I mean, it's all around timing and connection when you hit the footy. But for me, you know, there's three main components around kicking it well, and that's momentum, alignment, and follow through. And he just nails it so the timing, as you mentioned, Del, sweetly. He's been able to just launch that and just let the wind then play on the back of it. But yeah, Nathan Cleary's obviously in terms of accuracy and that ability to just put those deft little kicks in. He's got some serious ability.
What about
as well.
Ben Hunt as well? Ben Hunt in certain areas is really good. Obviously, he doesn't kick for goal.
Yeah, no, mate. Ben Hunt, he's very good at doing those little kicks too. And you know, Drew was saying then, even the skill set now of our kickers kicking at the outside of their foot, the inside of their foot. And, you know, Joey talks about it a fair bit. But I can tell you that story about Matt Burton. I don't know if you know this, but Triple M, they had us staying in the New South Wales State of Origin Hotel. Mm. Anyway, so I was there checking in on that, and then I saw Burton, and mate, he's a massive boy, and I just said, I go, hey, Burts, and I just yelled out because I feel like I know him, but I just want to say hello, and I was fanboying, and I just loved him. He's such a nice country kid, and mate, he's one of those guys that he's one of my favourite players to watch. He's an absolute superstar.
And I think Freddie's probably going to have him part of that team now, that squad for the next... What, decade or so?
10 years, yeah. I think if Panthers had their time over again, they wouldn't have released him, but it is what it is.
It certainly
unless
is.
Rugby Union throw a beat at him. We'll see.
Don't worry about rugby. I know we got a dual national on the team here, but don't worry.
Mate. You're a winger, mate, at the end of the day. Is your
one
pet
of the
a
greats,
dick?
Too.
Yeah, you were one of the greats. We're going to... Have you got a pet that is a dick? off the back of talking to a guy, we're about to play some audio. We spoke to a bloke called Clayton from far north Queensland a little bit earlier today. His mate and him were chased by some sort of prehistoric bird, Dill?
Mate, I'm from up that way, so north Queensland. There's a bird called a cassowary, and it's something like out of Jurassic Park meets an ostrich meets an emu, and they've got these big sharp claws, and they're actually so territorial, they will chase you. They're actually bullies.
Yeah,
and they stand tall and they go after you. So when mum and dad, they used to go, mate, look after yourselves. Everyone thought just look after yourself like crocodiles and all that and snakes. Mate, these things here, you should see them. They're crazy looking things, these cassowaries. So when you
they're
go up to Port
deadly
Douglas.
Birds.
Yeah, they are. They're very prehistoric things, but they've been around forever and a day. And you haven't even heard of that before.
I've never even heard of them before. I'm just looking up on Google as you're talking and they look exactly like something out of Jurassic Park. Well, we're going to go to Clayton now. Him and his mate were on trail bikes and they were being chased. Let's have a listen.
He had this feeling on the back of his neck, like, you know, your hair stand up on the back of your neck, like someone's watching you or someone's following you or something like that. Anyway, he's turned over his left shoulder. He saw this black bird, like probably a meter from him, which made him, he reckons he screamed out like top note. And then all of a sudden he's turned his bike to the right side and he's gone into the scrub and he's landed in the scrub. And I've just gone, holy mac, man, are you all right? And he goes, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just holding out behind this tree so he doesn't let it come towards me. Like I stand 1.85 meters tall. This bird stood at probably, I reckon, another 30, 40 centimeters higher than me.
Oh, wow. Like
that's when he stood straight up. I started revving up my bike at the same, and then he sort of crouched back down into looking at me at my bike. At the same time, Cammy took off past me and went up the track, and then he didn't know which way to go then, and then he just paid attention to me and he started chasing me then on my bike.
Oh, mate.
Mate, I've got to ask this.
Jurassic Park. Yeah, yeah. I've seen the Velociraptor scenes. Yeah. I don't like it.
Yeah, I've got to ask. So when they strike out at you, have they got, like, is it two or three bits of claws, or what happens there? How do they strike at you? Do they try and gut you? Is that right?
Yeah, mate, their middle toe, it's protruding longer than the other two, and that thing's built, like, if you'd know, Wendell, like, back in the day, them old people used to make spears back in the day. That's what it looks like. So if someone threw a bullet spear at your stomach, it'd go right through you, and that's exactly what this thing's like, you know?
Yeah, it is unbelievable. And that's when he talked about that and he spoke about it, my dad was from the Torres Strait Islands and up at the Gulf of Carpentaria and down to the Daintree, all those rainforests, and that's where you got to watch them. Sometimes you don't know they're there, and all of a sudden, as he said,
mate.
Did you hear the fear in his voice when he said,
can keep them up there, mate. Yeah. You Queenslanders deserve those. So that prehistoric bird sounds like what? It sounds like a dick, and it is. Just off the back of that ridiculous bird up there in North Queensland. What's it called again?
Cassowary.
A cassowary, which is basically some prehistoric dinosaur-looking thing that attacked a couple of blokes up there.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a couple of geese at my mate Clint's farm. There used to be 8 of them, and I think they've been taken down by some eagles, maybe some foxes. There's only 2 left, but they've got a massive attitude, these geese. Right, they just float around the place, and they just go...
Big energy.
Like big energy is right. But even if when you're trying to feed them and look after them and so forth, they're still... We'll put the audio of them up at the farm up on our socials. What about you, brother?
Yeah, look, I like animals, but there's one animal I don't like. There's a guy called Anthony Maroon who works
in... We all know Maroon, yeah.
Well, but if people who don't know Anthony Maroon, he's a good mate. So when we do a few functions, I have a few sleepovers. I don't like sleeping over his place anymore because he's got this little dog.
Yeah.
And it's a racist dog.
What do you mean?
It's just racist the dog hates me, always barks at me. And I said to Maroon, you know what? I'm not staying at your place anymore because your dog's racist. You know what he says to me?
Yeah.
No, mate, he just hates you.
Oh, wow. So we threw it out there on 133.53. Is your pet a dick? And Richard from Londonderry, tell us your story.
Yeah, g'day, mate. G'day, guys. How are you?
G'day, Rich. Richard. We're well, thanks, mate.
Yeah, I got a horse, Mr. Ed. Every time he goes to get his feet done, he'll stand on my foot. But when I go to pull my foot off, he leans on me so I can't get my foot out. He's just a real dick, yeah. He won't do it to my daughter. My daughter can do anything with him, but yeah. He just annoys me. We've also got a dog, a Marama pup, who's a dick. He'll sit out in the backyard and bark at 12 o'clock at night, and he'll just be laying there barking for no reason.
We love it. Great call, Richard. So, thank you very much.
So good, mate. Ian there from Gregory Hills, mate. What's your pet like? What's the go there?
Mate, well, I'll start by saying all cats are dicks, but my cat's especially a major dick because whenever I lay down to try and have a little nap on a Sunday afternoon, he insists on coming and pressing his rusty sheriff's badge against my forehead like he's a teacher trying to give me a good boy stamp.
That's so good.
Good on you, Ian. That is great. Let's go and speak to Fran. G'day, Fran.
Hey, hey guys. How's it going?
Yeah, we're good, thanks. What's your pet? Is it a dick?
Yeah, well, she's a little bit of a dick, so it's a lowercase, and she calls people an asshole.
Oh. Well, I've been told by the producers that you've actually sent the audio of your... What sort of bird is it?
Yeah.
So it's a little rainbow lowercase.
Oh, okay, amazing. Have you name? What's Para. The... What was the name?
Para.
Para, as
yeah.
in the footy
found
team.
In Para. Yeah, she was found in Parramatta. She's a rescue.
Oh, well done. Beautiful. Okay, let's have a listen to Para calling you an asshole.
Hello? How are you?
Can we play that again?
Yeah.
Okay, this is Para calling Fran an asshole.
Hello? How are you?
How long has it been calling you that for?
So the thing is, she already came with that. So we think her old owners didn't treat her very well. She only says it to women.
Oh,
So she only says it to me. However, the person we rescued her from, who took her in, he taught her how to say "love you" as well. So she'll call me an asshole, and then she'll go "love you."
Oh, thank you, Fran.
Beautiful.
France apparently is facing a shortage of mustard, with supermarket shelves bare despite being the world's largest consumer of the much-loved condiment. Are you a mustard man, Jude?
Yeah, I don't mind the hot English on, like, just a bit of...
Roast beef or something?
Roast beef or the pork at Christmas time and that sort of stuff, so...
Mate, applesauce goes with pork. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, a bit of everything. It's good, mate.
What about you? What about you, Del?
The ham.
Oh, the ham, yeah.
Yeah, I'm plain Jane. I just like to go tomato sauce or nothing at all. Obviously, it's not a condiment, but I just like to go tomato sauce or nothing. I don't mind barbecue every now and then, but more so tomato sauce is number one. That's it. Tomato sauce... Big gap and
big gap.
Barbecue, no mustard. That's all too fancy for
no
me.
No moutarde.
No, none of that.
No moutarde.
No.
No, see, you got to like the smoky barbecue if you're having like a bacon and egg roll or something. No. You've got to have the barbecue store.
Hey, Jude, what about a nice bit of HP sauce? Houses of Parliament sauce from England. That is delicious. We'll put a poll up. We'll put a poll up on our socials. Plus, give us a call right now on 133353. Tell us what your favourite condiment is. We'll come up with the poll results in a moment. Vote for the King of Condiments on Instagram right now. Back to you, Jude.
I do love the hot sauce. Like, there's a tapatio that I just chuck on tacos and I chuck it on, you know, roast potatoes and stuff like that as well. It's super hot.
What's that puppy called?
Tapatio.
Tapatio.
Really nice.
Tapatio.
Yep.
If you say it like that.
Say it again.
Tapatio.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tapatio.
Yeah.
Nice, dude.
People won't be able to concentrate driving home, dude, with that type. Just say one
tapatio.
More time.
Tapatio. Hot sauce. Hot sauce.
And there's tapatio. No need. Cause
better if we ask you to do it rather than just doing over and over again.
And I know our listeners can't see you, but you're putting on the sexy eyes too, mate. No need to put on the sexy eyes, dude.
No need to take your shirt off either, mate.
Please.
Seriously, Canada is one of the world's larger producers of mustard seeds, and the Ukraine is also a leading producer and exporter of mustard seeds. Last year, however, a drought struck the provinces of Alberta and some place that I can't even say in the Ukraine, very sort of funny name, where most of the crop is grown. The Canadian harvest was about half of what it normally is.
Well.
So there you go. Mm. I thought Canadians only really love their maple syrup on the pancakes. How good is that? So the poll is coming in at the moment. We'll give you the results. And the poll's in. Jude, 29% for smoky barbecue. But Del, you've won it with 36%.
Oh, they love the Del.
The Rush Hour with Gus, Jude and Wendell. Weekdays from 4 on Triple M.